An estimated 600 women served during the American Civil War. They had signed up, disguised as men. Hollywood has missed a significant chapter of cultural history here. Or is this history ideologically too difficult to deal with? Historians have often struggled to deal with women who do not respect gender distinctions, and nowhere is that distinction more sharply drawn than in the question of armed combat. Even today it can cause controversy having a woman on a typical Swedish moose hunt. But from antiquity to modern times, there are many stories of female warriors, of Amazons. The best known find their way into the history books as warrior queens, rulers as well as leaders. They have been forced to act as any Churchill, Stalin or Roosevelt. Semiramis from Nineveh, who shaped the Assyrian Empire, and Boudicca, who led one of the bloodiest English revolts against the Roman forces of occupation, to cite just two. Boudicca is honoured with a statue on the Thames at Westminster Bridge, opposite Big Ben. Be sure to say hello to her if you happen to pass by. On the other hand, history is reticent about women who were common soldiers, who bore arms, belonged to regiments, and took part in battles on the same terms as men, though hardly a war has been waged without women soldiers in the ranks. Chapter 1. Friday, April 8th. Dr. Jonasson was woken by a nurse 5 minutes before the helicopter was expected to land. It was just before 1:30 in the morning.
"What?" he said, confused.
"Rescue service helicopter coming in. Two patients, an injured man and a younger woman. The woman has gunshot wounds."
"All right," Jonasson said wearily.
Although he had slept for only half an hour, he felt groggy. He was on the night shift in the ER at Sahlgrenska Hospital in Göteborg. It had been a strenuous evening. By 12:30, the steady flow of emergency cases had eased off. He had made a round to check on the state of his patients and then gone back to the staff bedroom to try to rest for a while. He was on duty until 6, and seldom got the chance to sleep, even if no emergency patients came in. But this time he had fallen asleep almost as soon as he turned out the light. Jonasson saw lightning out over the sea. He knew that the helicopter was coming in the nick of time. All of a sudden a heavy downpour lashed at the window. The storm had moved in over Göteborg. He heard the sound of the chopper and watched as it banked through the storm squalls down towards the helipad. For a second he held his breath when the pilot seemed to have difficulty controlling the aircraft, then it vanished from his field of vision and he heard the engine slowing to land. He took a hasty swallow of his tea and set down the cup. Jonasson met the emergency team in the admissions area. The other doctor on duty took on the first patient who was wheeled in, an elderly man with his head bandaged, apparently with a serious wound to the face. Jonasson was left with the second patient, the woman who had been shot. He did a quick visual examination. It looked like she was a teenager, very dirty and bloody and severely wounded. He lifted the blanket that the rescue service had wrapped around her body and saw that the wounds to her hip and shoulder were bandaged with duct tape, which he considered a very clever idea. The tape kept bacteria out and blood in. One bullet had entered her hip and gone straight through the muscle tissue. He gently raised her shoulder and located the entry wound in her back. There was no exit wound. The round was still inside her shoulder. He hoped it had not penetrated her lung, and since he did not see any blood in the woman's mouth, he concluded that probably it had not. "Radiology," he told the nurse in attendance. That was all he needed to say. Then he cut away the bandage that the emergency team had wrapped around her skull. He froze when he saw another entry wound. The woman had been shot in the head, and there was no exit wound there, either. Jonasson paused for a second, looking down at the girl. He felt dejected. He often described his job as being like that of a goalkeeper. Every day people came to his place of work in varying conditions, but with one objective: to get help. Jonasson was the goalkeeper who stood between the patient and Fonus Funeral Service. His job was to decide what to do. If he made the wrong decision, the patient might die, or perhaps wake up disabled for life. Most often he made the right decision because the vast majority of injured people had an obvious and specific problem: a stab wound to the lung, or a crushing injury after a car crash, were both particular and recognisable problems that could be dealt with.
The survival of the patient depended on the extent of the damage and on Jonasson's skill. There were two kinds of injury that he hated. One was a serious burn case, because no matter what measures he took, the burns would almost inevitably result in a lifetime of suffering. The second was an injury to the brain. The girl on the gurney could live with a piece of lead in her hip and a piece of lead in her shoulder, but a piece of lead inside her brain was a trauma of a wholly different magnitude. He was suddenly aware of his nurse saying something.
"Sorry, I wasn't listening."
"It's her."
"What do you mean?"
"It's Lisbeth Salander. The girl they've been hunting for the past few weeks for the triple murder in Stockholm."
Jonasson looked again at the unconscious patient's face. He realized at once that the nurse was right. He and the whole of Sweden had seen Salander's passport photograph on billboards outside every newspaper kiosk for weeks. And now the murderer herself had been shot, which was surely poetic justice of a sort. But that was not his concern. His job was to save his patient's life, irrespective of whether she was a triple murderer or a Nobel Prize winner. Or both.